Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. Later in the show, I'll be joined by KHOI producer Ron Carson to interview a member of the upcoming band in our third Thursday series, Dr. Murdoch. So stay tuned for that. We will also have a visit from an Ames attorney and mediator whose quest is to increase our town's capacity for conflict resolution, especially among its youth. Top of the news, the crabapple trees are in bloom. That's certainly my favorite time of year. And I walked out this morning and deposited on my sidewalk was a dead rabbit. My 4.5-year-old hound dog has caught her first rabbit. She is officially now more than just a hound dog. So shout out to Georgia. Great job. We're going to start off the show with a dispatch from last week. Last Wednesday, I was privileged to get to ride in the Ames Public Library's bookmobile. It being Wednesday afternoon, the bookmobile was off to the site at North Fairway on Bloomington and Stang Road in the Somerset District. I joined Linda Olson and Daniel Ramey in the bookmobile garage at the library. Both Linda and Daniel have a Class D chauffeur's license, so either of them can drive. This time, Linda drove while Daniel took the jump seat in the back.
Buckled in back there, Daniel?
Yes.
Now I have to put the steps up and open my garage door.
Oh, we're headed straight out.
That is right. This is the feature of the new, fully remodeled library that we pull in and pull out. Garage door goes down.
Okay, we're turning right onto 5th Street. On the ride over, I got some information about the bookmobile. It goes out 3 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. It has stops at Trinity Christian Reformed Church on the west end of Ontario, at St. Cecilia's School on the north end of town, at Old Orchard Laundromat on South 16th, Mitchell School on the southeast end of town, and Edwards School at the southwest end of town, and of course Fairway North, where we were heading last Wednesday.
Do you have regulars at these stops?
Yes, most definitely.
And so do you select books that you know they'll like?
Yes, I do try to do that.
Some kids that like the Baby Mouse graphic novels, so make sure that we have a bunch of those on board.
And as for their adult patrons,
we have the best stuff on the bookmobile.
Sometimes, as a reporter, I found you just get lucky. That was the case this Wednesday because I happened to book a ride the day of the year designated as National Bookmobile Day.
All right, I'm going to close the window so I can start the generator. Today is National Bookmobile Day, April 13th, 2016.
Wow. And so what are you doing special for that? Anything?
Yeah, so we have a trivia contest going on. We're going to ask the patrons as they come on if they want to participate, and then we'll ask them a series of questions, and if they get them right, they get a prize.
I asked for a sample question.
What are the names of the previous bookmobiles?
What's the name of this bookmobile?
This bookmobile is Darby, Derek Anderson's Rockin' Bookmobile Yahoo. Derek Anderson is the artist illustrator who designed the wrap, the artwork on the outside of the bookmobile.
Cool. So Darby is this bookmobile, and what is the name of the previous bookmobiles?
The first one did not have a name. The second one was Betty, and the previous one to Darby was Miles.
Capitalizing on the Smiles theme, Smiles being the big blue dog.
Exactly. And also, the bookmobile goes Miles.
Soon enough, the patrons came trickling in. First, there was Patty Wu, a former employee of the Ames Public Library.
Hi, Patty. What's up?
I love the bookmobile.
Did you ever get to operate the bookmobile?
No, because I was afraid of driving it. It's so big. And at that time, you had to back it down the alley? Yeah. No.
You live in this neighborhood, I remember.
Yeah, I do. That's why I love to come here. And the people are always so helpful and friendly.
So you've reserved a book, and they've put it on the reserve shelf for you right here.
Right. So I look at the library catalog and figure out what I want. It's so easy. You just put it on hold and select your stop, and they bring it to you. It's awesome.
Yeah, there's actually quite a few books on hold here.
Yeah, luckily they're not all mine.
More families. Families with infants. A first grade school teacher who found a book she could use in her classes. A kid on rollerblades returning a book. And a mother-daughter pair who rode there on their bikes. But one family of three girls, Alexis, Allison, and Autumn, stole the show. Linda and Daniel nodded at me. Here's the interviews you're looking for. I started with the oldest, 10-year-old Alexis.
I saw you were bringing back a big bag of books and movies, right?
Yeah.
How often do you come here?
Mostly now, every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday. Who brings you here?
My grandma.
What do you like about the bookmobile?
I like it that they carry, they just don't, have the books. They also have the movies and the puppets. So, little kids, they can still come in and they can get a puppet or something, and then they can get the movies, too.
Your sisters are both younger than you, so they get some of that stuff, maybe?
Yeah, definitely.
What are you looking for today?
Two movies and one book.
Is that your limit, or...?
Yes. I'm going to probably look for an interesting book, probably about museums, because I'm going to go to one tomorrow for a field trip.
What's the best book you've read lately?
Lately, it's in my classroom. It's called Number the Stars, and it's about the Jews and the, Nazis.
Right, I think Lois is by Lois something. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, I read the book a while back. Yeah, it was a good book. Okay, I'll let you get to your business, but you're going to have to answer some questions from one of these two.
Okay.
Hold on. Let's see. Ready? How many bookmobiles has the Ames Public Library had?
I wouldn't necessarily trust your sister. Well, your sister said two and three, right?
Mm-hmm. Two or three.
And I said, don't trust her. And you know that it's got to be more than one.
This one. What do you think?
Four.
Nice job. It's been four. Four total. Oh, including this one.
The girls demanded more questions. So Daniel complied with questions about the physical characteristics of the bookmobile, the size of its wheels, and the graphics on the wrap. To answer, the girls, of course, began dashing in and out of the bookmobile, always using the designated exit door to leave and the designated entrance door to return. In the meantime, they did manage to pick out some books and movies.
So what did you settle on, Alexis?
I settled on Intimidate Reptile... Obedia?
Yeah, it's Ultimate Reptile Obedia. So it's like an encyclopedia of reptiles. You really like reptiles?
I like all animals.
Well, that's unusual. Not everybody likes those reptiles. They're the hardest to love.
I also got Miss the Tail of a Sheepdog Puppy and Babe.
Oh, Babe.
I love Babe.
Me too.
As soon as I see it, I always have to pick it up.
Well, it's kind of funny that you have both a movie about a sheepdog and a movie about a pig who wants to be a sheepdog.
Yeah, I guess so.
Allison, how old are you?
8, almost to turn 9.
Can you tell me what you checked out today from the bookmobile?
Dream Fever, Bag Children, and Big Hero 6.
And why did you choose those books and movies?
Because Dream Fever seems good. And I love the Beethoven movies, and I love Big Hero 6.
Have you ever visited the bookmobile somewhere else besides here in the Fairway parking lot?
Sawyer.
You have the same rule as your sister about how many books you can check out?
One book and two movies.
Do you usually read the book before you have to return it?
Usually.
So quickly, Autumn, what'd you get?
Of my movies, I got Puppy Pound, Dog City, and this witch book.
Lulu Goes to Witch School. Wow, all three of you got dog stories. Do you have dogs at home?
Yeah, we have one. His name is Rex. And he is a border collie.
Okay. Okay. Have a great day. We'll see you next Wednesday at the Bookmobile.
Okay.
Ames is one of only three communities in Iowa that have bookmobiles, the Quad Cities and Sioux City being the other two. And Darby is certainly one of the treasures of Ames, something that enhances the quality of life of the dozens of families who choose to use it. The staffers like it, too. Here's Daniel Ramey.
It's fun because you get to know all the patrons and people who come on all the time really well.
If Darby is a friend to these library patrons, then, according to 8-year-old Allison, the best thing about a friend is reliability.
What do you like about the bookmobile?
That it's here every Wednesday.
Greta Anderson reporting for Local Talk from the North Ferry parking lot on National Bookmobile Day. And that is Dr. Murdoch, band that will be playing in our house this Thursday evening, 7 to 8, for our third Thursday concert that we have. This will be the fourth of those this year, and looking forward to that. We're going to have one of the band members, the drummer, Jose Mendez, join us later in the show. And so stick around for that. Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, and with me is Ames attorney and professional mediator, Amy Moore, who has been doing some volunteering in the Des Moines schools in a program aimed at using restorative justice to handle disruptive student behavior rather than using direct punishments like detention, suspensions, and expulsion. Amy formed a nonprofit this past August called Resolve Iowa with the objective of spreading this concept to other communities in Iowa. Welcome, Amy.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So can you describe the program in the Des Moines schools that you have participated in?
Sure. AMIS, which is a community organization nonprofit, approached the Des Moines middle schools about establishing a restorative justice and mediation program in their middle schools. This was implemented about 2 years ago. And what we do as volunteers, we're trained in mediation. We go in pairs to the middle schools on an as-needed basis or, depending on the school, on a scheduled day. And peers in conflict can opt in to participate in mediation. And these conflicts can be as simple as middle school disagreements all the way up to things that could potentially be referred on to juvenile court. And we come in as volunteer mediators. We're unknown to the kids. We're not with the school. We're not with the police. We make that very clear to them that we're just there as volunteers and volunteer mediators. And we sit down with them and we help them and facilitate a conversation to talk about the conflict, to talk about different ways they can approach it. And if they choose to, they can then reduce an agreement to writing as to how they're going to deal with the conflict going forward. And we found great success with this for a number of reasons. Number one, we're neutral. That's kind of a core tenet of mediation, is that it's a neutral facilitator. And two, we're all volunteers and we're all unknown to these kids. It's not yet another school official, school administrator that they work with regularly. So there's a lot of buy-in from the kids just with that when they realize we're just there because we want to help.
Cool. And so a large part of your job is listening to the kids who are having issues with one another.
Exactly. And that's a core tenet, too, of mediation is it's very hard for me this morning to talk so much because in my professional and volunteer life, a core tenet of mediation is to be an active listener and to let people tell their story, which a lot of other forums for resolving conflict, including our justice system, that's not really part of the equation.
Okay, so the kids are not necessarily used to having people listen to them.
True, true. And having a safe space to tell their story, we also make it very clear it's confidential and that the only thing that would survive the discussion or be disclosed coming out of that mediation would be if they chose to reach an agreement that was in writing, because we afford the kids an opportunity to have a copy of that, and the school also gets a copy of that contract. But otherwise, our conversation and what we discuss, it's not leaving that room or that mediation.
Can you give me an example of a conflict that was solved through mediation or through your mediation?
Sure. So as a volunteer, I worked a lot in the Weeks Middle School in Des Moines, and we were called in. I laughingly call it kind of a Hail Mary pass. Our administrator down there that referred cases to us said that there was a conflict that had really escalated that was initially between two middle school girls down there. And it had gotten to the point where there were a number of youth involved. It had involved threats of violence. There was even talk of a weapon, and they were obviously very, very concerned. And before referring this over to their school resource officer, which is the police officer in the school, they wanted to see if we could come in and do something. So faced with those really wonderful facts, we came down as mediators, and we work in pairs, and I was one of the mediators in this situation. And basically it boils down to two girls had gotten into a conflict that then exploded on social media, which you talk to any school administrator or teacher or school resource officer. Social media is a huge, huge part of a lot of these cases of conflict and bullying in our schools right now, because I'm old enough and you're old enough when we were in middle school, that wasn't an issue. The worst that could happen is someone put notes up around the school or something. Now it's instantly known by everyone in their circle. So the initial conflict itself hadn't been that big a deal.
Well, do you know what it was about?
Sure. One of them had disrespected the other on the bus by looking at them the wrong way. And something that simple had snowballed into something that could easily have gotten a lot of kids involved in the juvenile justice system, to put it mildly. So we came in and sat down with the two girls who were initially involved and then realized, after affording both of them an opportunity to speak, we met with them separately at first. We realized we needed to bring a third person into the room. And this other girl had been not initially involved, but she had kind of escalated it on both sides. So we quickly contacted the administration by running down the hall. And we had, because all the kids that participate, not only do they have to opt in, their parents or their guardians have to agree that they participate. So we got this girl's grandmother on the phone, who was her guardian, and grandma said it was okay. So we brought the girl into the room that The third girl. And during the course of that morning, we met with them for a couple hours, but we got the whole story. But it was just affording those girls an opportunity to not only get heard, but be heard by the others and to hear themselves even, because what they realized was it was like the game of telephone. A lot of what they've been hearing was coming from third parties and the message was being changed. So it was the first time the three of them had all sat down and listened to one another. And by the end of that morning, the three of them had developed a plan as to how they were going to communicate with one another. They had written it down and they had decided that they had a rule. They were going to have to talk to each other directly. They were not going to rely on their friends and they weren't going to put anything up on what they had been using was Instagram, but they weren't going to put anything up on social media without knowing the actual facts and without having talked to each other directly. And they were in tears and hugging one another. And this is something when we'd walked in that morning, we didn't really have a lot of hope for.
The administrators were the ones in tears.
Yes, the administrators were shocked and were very obviously pleased. And like I said, it was not an exaggeration to say that some of these girls and the others that had gotten involved could easily have found themselves facing charges in the juvenile justice system.
And then what happens to kids in the juvenile justice system? I mean, what's the bigger picture that this is part of? I understand that, once a kid gets involved at one level, it kind of tends to build. They get labeled as, you know, this kind of kid. Then maybe, a few years later, they're not just referred to the juvenile justice system, but they're more readily, sent into the adult system.
Exactly. And that's the biggest problem we've got right now with our juvenile justice system is that it was basically modeled on our adult system for shorter people. And research into the juvenile brain shows that that's not the approach we should be taking because as many of us know now that we have research, their accelerator in their brains it's on full and the brakes are not. So decision making and future impact of those decisions, those aren't real high level skills in a lot of juvenile brains. So to model our justice system on adults who have fully formed brains doesn't make a lot of sense. So mediation and restorative justice serve a couple of purposes. By offering it as a diversion to a traditional juvenile justice route where they would face charges and the consequences of those charges, by diverting kids into programs like these, it's not only alleviating them having that contact with the system, but it's also adding an accountability piece that's not there in our juvenile justice system right now. There is no victim input in our juvenile justice system. Mediation and restorative justice allow that victim to have input, and it provides the community to have input, and it provides a forum for that kid to see that their actions and that their offense has a greater impact on not just the victim, but also the community at large. And there's currently no vehicle for that in our juvenile justice system.
Okay, so you've talked a little bit about mediation where there was a conflict. You came in, you mediated, you helped them sort through their issues. Restorative justice is more of a case where there is a victim. There, in the case that you described, there was not yet really a victim. But with restorative justice, there is someone who has been harmed, someone who has been wronged. Maybe this happens even outside of school and the police are involved. So can you give an example of that, of restorative justice, and explain how that works?
Sure. There's a couple of juvenile restorative justice programs in Iowa right now. One of them is in West Des Moines. It's the Youth Justice Initiative, and I have had the honor of being a volunteer with that program as well. A perfect example of that was actually a case I was volunteering on as a member of that restorative justice circle of a shoplifting case. And this kid had gone into a retail store in Des Moines and kind of on a dare taken some items and he got caught. So instead of West Des Moines police automatically just referring that up the chain in the juvenile justice system, they referred that case to the Youth Justice Initiative. And what happens in that restorative process is it's usually a circle process. So unlike a mediation where it's usually just the parties and the mediator, a circle process involves the parties. There's a facilitator. There's the victim. But there's also community members, and that's kind of the critical piece of restorative justice. So in this case that I was involved in, the youth was there. His parents were there. We had our neutral facilitator. We also had community members, which included me. It had also included parents of youth that had been through the youth justice initiative process before. But it also afforded that store owner to be a part of the process. And in the first circle discussion that we had, that store owner was able to come in and say to the group the impact that shoplifting has on his business and the cost financially and also the cost of emotionally, concerns about his business going forward, all those other things. And he was able to discuss that in the room. And the parents of kids that had gone through the program, they were able to speak to how it affected them as parents, how it affected their identity. And this kid who is in the program right now for this offense, his parents were able to hear that and to hear that they're not bad people, they're not alone. All of these things, all of these conversations, this doesn't happen in a traditional court setting.
Right.
If this kid had been referred on, he may or may not have received, you know, probation, community service, what have you. But there would have been no opportunity for that victim to have any input, and there would have been no opportunity for that kid to hear the larger impact of what he probably considered a pretty minor deal.
Right. And the parents, that's a really interesting piece, because the parents of the offender, the child offender, then they feel all this shame for the child being involved in a system. And with the presence of those other parents, that can be mitigated. And then the next, you know, their relationship to their child can be healed in some way, you know, because they aren't maybe so on edge about what's happened.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's a core tenet, too, of restorative justice, is viewing it not just as the victim and offender, but the larger community as a whole. And that includes the family.
So how did the offender in this case make restitution to the store owner?
So he was able to, and that's part of it, too. Victims in this process can have input as to what that restitution looks like. So this kid that was involved was able to make community service hours, but to tailor it to what that victim felt would be important. So he was able to, like I said, have that victim has some input where, once again, in a traditional setting, that would not happen.
Right. And the story that I heard from, is it Harvey Harrison?
Yes.
He told a story about one of these cases of restorative justice, a shoplifting case, where the restitution for the child was to work or volunteer at the store.
Mm-hmm.
And then the store owner and this kid developed such a bond that he ended up hiring,
yes,
the young person,
yes,
at the end of his probation period. So it sounds like really wonderful things can happen through this process.
Yes. I'm also familiar with another case where it involved vandalism at a golf course. And a similar situation happened, that victim, owner of the golf course, had those kids come up and fix the graffiti, fix the vandalism. And once again, one of the kids ended up working for him that summer.
I'm talking to Amy Moore. She's an Ames attorney and mediator. She's also formed the nonprofit Resolve Iowa, and hoping to kind of convey or spread this concept of restorative justice and mediation to other communities, having volunteered in Des Moines quite a bit. So how is that going? Are you having conversations with people from other communities about these programs and the benefits that they have for kids and the community?
We are. And we're looking forward to establishing, hopefully, a pilot program with either a school or a youth service provider here in our part of the world. And to that end, we also have an upcoming workshop and training that we're going to be holding in May. And it's twofold. We hope to have folks come out that are just interested in the process to learn more about it, but also folks, too, that would be interested in volunteering as facilitators of these mediations and facilitators of these circles. And right now, we've got our school resource officer here in Ames is going to be coming out to that. We've got some probation folks over in Boone County as well that will also be participating. So part of it is just spreading awareness, spreading the word that these services are out there and that we want to be the facilitator for these types of programs.
Well, that's great. So can members of the public, people who are listeners, can they sign up for these workshops for mediation?
Most definitely. Most definitely. And we've had a lot of interest so far from folks. I've been also reaching out to congregations here in Ames. A lot of our congregations have a very strong social justice group and movement within their congregation. So that is this is right up their alley and something that's very prominent in the news right now as well.
So where do they find Resolve Iowa to sign up for a workshop so that they can be a mediator in these situations?
I would encourage anybody that is interested to contact us at resolveiowa@gmail.com. We are a very, very low-funded nonprofit right now, so we are working on establishing our website. But for right now, anybody that's interested or just wants more information, please feel free to just drop us a line at resolveiowa@gmail.com, and I can happily forward you the additional information we have on that upcoming workshop. It'll be May 17th and May 24th in the evening from 6 to 9 both nights, and that will be here at the UU's here in Ames.
At the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Ames. Well, great. Thank you so much, Amy, for coming in and describing what's going on in Des Moines and hopefully in other communities soon.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Amy Moore, Ames attorney and founder of the 501c3 nonprofit Resolve Iowa, which has the objective of organizing volunteer mediators to work in schools to teach youth their skills for conflict resolution. And really, it sounds like to change the school environment from a no-tolerance kind of setting to a more inclusive and trusting environment, where students are given the attention they need and taught emotional skills to handle the many challenges they otherwise couldn't face. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson. That was Kinky Rhino, which is an offshoot of the Blue Man Group. They're going to be performing at C.Y. Stevens Tuesday evening and
Wednesday. Yep.
Tuesday and Wednesday. And Kinky Rhino is actually going to be performing as well right here around the corner at DG's Tap House. With us is Adam Brimeyer to tell us about it. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So how did it come about that this national act decided to knock on your door there over at DG's?
Well, it's quite remarkable that it happened at all. One of the members of the Blue Man Group, the touring group that's coming through Ames, somehow found a Reverb Nation page for a band that hasn't been around for 5 years, A friend of ours, Tom Gordon, was in this band, and they contacted him because they were looking for a place for their side project, Kinky Rhino, to play. We actually found out later that, like, yeah, they've been kind of doing this, like, as they tour around, they'll find these small little venues and try and play. It's a really new project for them. Well, Tom came to me on Friday and up at the bar. And mentioned that he thinks he might be talking to a member of the Blue Man Group and that they're looking for a place to play. Both of us kind of thought this might be, it's too good to be true. I mean, why would a group that large be looking for a small venue? Well, Saturday they got a hold of him and gave him an email address and told him to have Adam get a hold of us. So I sent him an email. Actually, it was when KHOI was up there on Saturday night. Just at the end of that show, I sent a little email off to this Chris Rice. I'm like, okay, let's see what happens. And he shoots right back that, yes, that is indeed what it is. It's their side project, and they would like a place to play. And we started talking. And in the span of half an hour, we had the show set up. And we're ready to go. I've been actually in communication with them for the last day and a half, and it's been kind of fun, a lot of fun. They seem like really great dudes, and we're really excited about putting this show on.
So. It's amazing. They have so much energy. The Blue Man Group is such an energetic show, and then they're going to come over to your place and do their thing again.
Immediately after their show. Like, they are leaving. I'm assuming they're going to shower and remove the blue paint. I don't know. My next question.
All right. Well, so how many people in this act?
It's a five piece, as they describe it, a desert rock garage band. A couple of guitar players, bass player, drums, some singing. So it's not even, there's nothing really like Blue Man Group about it, but they're all incredibly accomplished musicians. And I've had an opportunity to listen to their EP that will be being released, at the end of this month. It's good. It's really good. But it's all written, and composed by Jeff Wright, who's also the singer, for the night. And, yeah, they'll be getting into town later on, today. I think I'll be speaking with them a little bit more about it, so.
Blue Man Group, that's kind of like when the Oompa Loompas grow up.
Yeah, right.
So there's a musical act before this as well, right?
Correct. Well, one of the things that was a stipulation was they don't really travel with any gear. Since they've got the Blue Man Group thing, which I'm sure they have plenty of gear, they don't have any of their own drums or guitar amps. So luckily, our kind of resident, one of our resident house bands, Electric Jury, has all of their gear up there. Matter of fact, by coincidence, we have exactly the gear they need, three guitar amps, a bass amp, and drums. So we're going to set up, and I am full disclosure, I am a guitar player in Electric Jury. We set up all of our gear, and we're going to play before, starting at 10. And then when they get there, they're going to jump on and, grab our gear and make it sing.
Awesome. And to add to the excitement, KHOI will be broadcasting this show live.
Yes.
At least the Blue Man Group, at least the Kinky Rhino part.
Yes. Well, I think we're going to start broadcasting, as I know, at 10. It's exciting that we have had this. We got the opportunity on Saturday to have our first on-the-air live broadcast from DG's Tap House at all. And now, only a few days later, we get the second one. And I'm really excited to get a chance to do this. I think it's a great partnership, and we're really excited to continue working with KHOI and providing some great on-the-air live entertainment.
Okay, and somebody from KHOI will get to talk to one of these Kinky Rhinos.
Yeah, Jeff.
Okay. Well,
that's a great name. Jeff Wright, actually, we talked last night, and he would like he wanted to be here today, but unfortunately, they're currently in the midst of flying here. So, hopefully, tomorrow, someone will get a chance to speak with him.
And
about
that
this.
That may be part of the broadcast as well. Well, thanks so much, Adam Brimeyer, from coming by. Yep, Adam does sound at DG's, and I guess he's a member of a band, too. So we've got our own show here at KHOI this Thursday, part of our third Thursday series, And with us is Ron Carson to tell us about it, as well as Jose Mendez, the drummer for the band Dr. Murdoch, who will be playing right here starting at 7, broadcast live over the air. We're really looking forward to this. We have this is the highlight of our spring season. So of Third Thursdays, I think. Right, Ron?
Well, actually, when I came up with the idea for this, what became the Third Thursday Cafe, the number one band I had in mind was Dr. Murdoch. And it took a while for them. They weren't ready earlier on, but now they're ready and excited to do this, and so am I. And it's coming up this week.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. We've been trying to practice the last few days pretty hard for this set and made the shows. Been looking forward to this for a while. Really like what you guys do.
Okay, yeah, the the sound is always very good, so you'll come away with a nice hour of live recorded music. And let's see, the last time you were featured on KHOI, back in August, Ron Carson here reported that you were living in a big old house with a dank, dingy basement called the Drum House.
Yeah, we call it the Drum House. Hopefully it'll be legendary when we leave, because there's a lot of musicians in the house and a lot of great bands that have been practicing there and starting there, and unknown bands at this point, like Ben, the singer for Dr. Murdoch. He has another side project called Space Camp. They just played at Vaudeville Muse recently, and I think they had a good show, and Blue Jack practices there. That's another nice up-and-coming band. And Colt Walkers, so lots of bands practicing there.
Wow, and so you, whose drums are they, if it's the Drum House?
There's been a total of 4 drum set up before, so that's kind of why they call it the Drum House.
Okay.
I got a drum set, Will's got a drum set, Dave's got a drum set. There used to be a 21-piece drum kit set up that we just set up for fun one day.
All right. Is your basement mold-proof and flood-proof?
That's what makes it rock and roll. It's not.
Oh. It adds, it's kind of like vinyl.
You
it adds
get
that
sick.
Little.
That comes with it, yeah. Yeah.
It's got the funk.
It toughens it up, yeah. It's got the funk. That's a good way to call it.
All right. Okay, so what's been happening with Dr. Murdoch in the last year?
Well, we've been taking a little break from playing shows, mainly to work on new recordings. We've been doing just some demos on our own at the Drum House in the basement. Just kind of been doing it on my own with our own hardware. Nothing too big, but we've been having fun in the recording process. Us doing it on our own means that we can mess around with the production a little more. We can add effects here and there. And that first song that you guys played, By the River, I was telling Ron that I tried to, just for funsies, do a little Tom York type of vocal effect on there, just reverse reverb. Normally it'd be harder to tell whoever's recording us, the engineer, to do that or ask for all those little things. But doing it on our own, we can experiment with a little few effects here and there, some other additional parts that we can throw in there and harmonize, vocal effects, all that extra stuff that we can do on our own schedule. It's been fun. We took some time off from playing shows for doing that, but we were excited to do this show when Ron asked us to do it. Just as, seems like a really good thing to do.
And it's going to be on the radio.
Yeah. That'll make us cool.
So so when you're mixing all this stuff, where do you do that, or where do you record?
Certainly not in the basement.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it might not be the greatest sound studio as far as acoustics and everything. But
it's got the funk.
It's got the funk, and that's really all that matters. Yeah. Well, it's not like a real studio, and we're just doing this to learn. And when we do go into the studio, hopefully it'll be a really big professional one where we can get the sound that we're looking for. At this point, we're just working with what we have just to stay busy and learn our stuff a little more. So when we are ready to do it, we'll totally be ready.
Okay, earlier you were telling me the story of how you and the lead singer, Ben,
yes.
met.
Yes.
Why don't you tell that story again?
It's such a small town, Clarion, Iowa, that you should know everybody, and especially if you're a musician, because there's like 6 maybe total in the history of Clarion. I don't know. And Ben happened to be one of them. I didn't know of him until I started coming to Ames, and my roommate, Caleb Avery, he's the one that introduced us. He said that this guy plays music. We should get together and play music sometime. So we started playing music and maybe jammed out once, twice maybe in Clarion. and moved to Ames, started hanging out here in Ames more, and I started seeing him around. And before too long, it was actually pretty much a whole Clarion project. The four of us that were the first members were all from Clarion, and surprisingly, like, we started a band in Ames, and we weren't necessarily hanging out. It just happened to work out that way that four hometown members joined a band later in the future together.
Amazing.
Most people don't know this, but Glenn Buxton, famous guitarist.
He's my neighbor. He was actually my next door neighbor on Main Street.
Seriously.
This is what you call a small town, small world. Town.
Is buried at the Evergreen Cemetery outside of Clarion.
Right outside Highway 3.
I did a pilgrimage there about a month ago and visited his grave. It has the guitar transcription from School's Out.
Yep. And he used to tell me that he wrote 18, that classic song, that was actually a song that he wrote. And he used to be such a goofball. I remember being younger and he would offer us eyeball bubble gum. And just being so corny, he'd put the gum up to his eye and be like, "You guys want an eyeball?" Just all 60s and stuff and trying to scare us, but we thought he was cool.
That song, School's Out?
That one was him too, yeah, but I don't know if he wrote that one.
Oh.
Well, it's got the transcription of the guitar part. I'm reading this and I'll see.
Oh, yeah.
That School's Out.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of a big deal when he was around in Clarion, and when he passed away, I remember hearing that a lot of people were coming to visit for the funeral. Didn't actually make it to it. Some of my friends did, but it was kind of like a small thing.
So how long have you been playing together, you, your band, Dr. Murdoch?
Oh, I think we're going on 5 years. The lineup has changed here and there. Officially, me and Ben Foster, the singer, have been playing for about 5 years. As a group, the group that we have now with Adam Lyons on the bass and Willa Petra on guitar, we've been going for almost 2.5 years, a good strong 2.5 years.
Okay, and you brought in a demo called Disco Kid.
Yeah, well, the funny thing about that one is Ben actually calls it An All of All the Nothingness, but he didn't have a title for it for a while.
Of All the Nothingness?
Yeah, so it's like kind of a hard one to say, but it's a really cool title, but he didn't call it that for a long time. He didn't have a title, so I thought he was saying Disco Kid in the song, but he was saying Thick-Skulled Kid. But he decided that he liked the sound of it, so I mean, officially, I think it's still titled In All of All the Nothingness, but he even calls it Disco Kid all the time. So
that's pretty equivalent, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's just call it Disco Kid.
I lived through the disco era, and yeah. I would agree.
He's from the disco days for sure.
Okay, well, let's give it a listen.
We should fade that one away just for radio.
FCC and all.
Yes.
Okay.
A positive message, but a censored message.
Okay. And you're going to censor your message on Thursday night, too?
We can.
That would be helpful. Yes. Dr. Murdoch will be playing Thursday night at our station. The public is invited. Everyone can come, even kids, if you don't mind exposing them to censored language.
To disco.
Yes.
And that's the nice thing about these shows that we have here. You know, I can't take Nadia here, my 17-year-old engineer, up to DG's, but I can bring her to KHOI and she can take in some American rock and roll, some Iowan rock and roll.
Yeah.
It's indigenous.
Definitely.
It's grown in the basement.
It's furry. So what else we got there?
Well, I'd like to note that I've heard this band for, I don't know, 2-3 years now and instantly liked them. But they have a chemistry to the band. You know, you can throw a bunch of musicians together. Okay, got a drummer, got, you know, two guitars, bass player, you know. But that doesn't mean it's going to become, you know, like a real band. It takes time, and they've spent many hours down that dingy basement working their sound and getting their chemistry together. And this doesn't happen with every band, but it certainly has with Dr. Murdoch.
Thank you, Ron. We have a lot of love for this project, and especially with the lineup, and we are really serious about it. We try and work really hard, and glad someone can hear that and what we're trying to do. And thank you.
That's Jose Mendez, the drummer from Dr. Murdoch. Like I said, they'll be playing this Thursday, 7 to 8. It'll be featured live on our radio, as will a show earlier in the week. Tuesday night, late at night, we'll be hearing Kinky Rhino with the Blue Man Group personnel.
Members of the Blue Man Group. Yes.
Right. And that chemistry is always on display. Whenever you take a band picture, you're all sort of laid out over each other on a couch.
Yeah, that was a fun photo shoot that Lucas Moser did for us, and paid him money to do a big, long photo shoot for us, and we decided to have fun with it. Sometimes we're in fighter poses, sometimes we're hugging, sometimes we just look silly, but it's been fun. It's been fun using those for promotional purposes, too.
Yeah, a band that has fun like that together, it really translates into the music.
Yeah, you should see us play Smash Brothers.
So there's a lot of work, a lot of fun. Do you have any side projects as a...
Yeah, I do make a lot of music on the side, and another one that I'm really focused on right now is my hip-hop project, World Bank. It's been a few successful shows at DG's, a few successful hip-hop nights up there, and we all kind of have side projects. Adam, the bassist, he has Mountain Eats Mountain. Will LaPietra does his own beautiful music on his own, even has an album out. Ben Foster doing Space Camp. Yeah, we stay pretty busy, I guess. When you just love music, you want to surround yourself in it. And Ames is a great place for doing that. We all have jobs on the side, too. So it'd be nice if we can make it a full-time gig, and I think that's what we're working for, because we recently acquired a van, and we're going to have to make monthly payments on this one. We used to own one before, but we used that to trade in for the new one that costs a little more money. So if we want to pay that van off, we're going to have to even step up our game even more, play more shows, get more money. So it's been fun.
It's the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining
us, Jose.
Once again, Jose's band, Dr. Murdoch, will be playing here at the station 7 to 8. Public is invited. You must come, in fact, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You're required to.
Yep.
Everybody listening right now.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. We started out the hour with a visit on the Ames Bookmobile, thanks to Circulation Coordinator Tracy Briseno at the Ames Public Library and staff Linda Olson and Daniel Ramey, who took me out to the North Fairway parking lot. We heard some kids really into their experiences on the Bookmobile. Then we heard from Ames attorney Amy Moore, who has formed a new nonprofit, Resolve Iowa, to introduce schools to the concept of restorative justice as a constructive way to solve behavior problems. And finally, we had this wonderful music segment with Adam Breimeyer from DG's Tap House. Eric Weber is sitting over there on the couch. He's going to be instrumental to getting that show on Tuesday night on the air. And he's always been instrumental for the Third Thursday sessions that we've had, getting our technical act together. So thanks to Eric for that. Ron Carson, producer of Third Thursday, and Dr. Murdoch drummer Jose Mendez. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's show. Thank you, Ron Carson, for making that possible. Local Talk was engineered by Nadia Abdelazim. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was a song by Kinky Rhino, playing tomorrow night at DG's, late at night. And let's see. Jose, do you want to announce that?
We had two Dr. Murdoch songs. The first one was By the River, and the second one was Disco Kid.
They'll be playing here at 7 p.m. Thursday. Arrive early if you can. Both of those shows will be broadcast at 89.1 megahertz, or you can stream it live at khoifm.org. KHOI welcomes volunteers of all ages and descriptions to help us in a myriad of ways. If you've got skills, we can use you. Call us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or visit us in person at 410 Douglas Avenue. If you've enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.